Welcome to Crypto Nights, where we help you finally make sense of the trending world of cryptocurrencies. So gather your virtual piggy bank and let's get started.
Hey, John, welcome to Crypto Nights podcast. We're just so excited to have you on our podcast. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you. Happy to be here.
Great. And we wanted you to talk a little bit about Loki and also just start telling us about, you and I had this mini chat before this session, and you were telling me about your definition of value and how you deconstruct it. So I want to delve into that in the context of Loki.
Sure, sure. So you want me to start with Loki itself, what we do?
Yeah, I think it'll be good if not everybody might know what Loki does. I know quite a bit because I've been reading up on you.
it's a bit esoteric. It's a bit complicated, right? So I'm John Wise. I'm the CEO and founder of Loki. I'm also the inventor of contextual derivation with my father, as well as semantic ontologies, fuzzy concept mapping, user modification of digital maps, and several other things. In addition to that stuff, I'm also the co-founder of the Digital Asset Trade Association, one of the co-founders of the Crypto House here that we're putting together in New York. I'll tell you a bit about that later. And the founder of Top Tier Affiliate Group. Backing up here real quick, the Digital Asset Trade Association, we don't really need to go into much, but we're not very well known, even though what we've accomplished has been well known, which was Wyoming, Colorado, and the state-by-state legislation and regulation changes. We've been brought on as advisors to many of the existing regulatory bodies and governance bodies in and around the U.S. as well as Europe. So going back to what Loki is, we're an intellectual property company. We have a couple of different sides to us. The first side really has very little to do with blockchain, which is just a prior art and novelty research tool. It's a consumer-facing tool. It's made to answer the first question that any inventor asks, which is, has this invention ever existed before? When you think about that, that's a very easy question to ask. But in a world where products, publications, patents, research, and even the very act of somebody discussing something to a party of more than two actually is enough to knock out a patent, in order to actually genuinely solve that question of has X been invented before, you have to know quite literally the sum of mankind's knowledge. Not such an easy thing to actually solve. So we've got a couple of different ways to accomplish that, but without going down that rabbit hole, what I think everybody on your interview is interested in, right, is how cryptocurrency comes into this. Intellectual property is one of the largest asset classes in the world. Makes up over the 20-year span, it's been estimated around $700 trillion. Now, let me give a caveat to this, because the margin of error for the auditing firms that do this have been quoted at over 90%. Okay. Depends one to another. Each of them have their own thing. None of them get audited on their auditing numbers, which is even worse. But the point is that intellectual property and innovation itself is massively powerful and a massive driver to the world's economy. We all have this generalized premise that an idea is worthless without execution. Well, go to any enterprise, go to Google or Samsung and ask them if they would have purchased the iPhone, right, before Apple has it. You better believe it, they would have. Well, if that's the case, then the execution, they know they can take care of, right? The idea itself is fundamentally valuable. So why is nobody doing anything about that, right? So using blockchain, cryptocurrency, our existing company that had users and sales before, we're making it possible for people anywhere in the world to buy, sell, and transact ideas themselves for real value.
Yeah, Yeah, absolutely. And that's very exciting. So, and I, did that whole thing come out of your auto racing? I mean, you had the most interesting of backgrounds. I like to study up on my guest speakers before I have them on the show. I've been reading up about Loki, and then I started reading up on you, and I couldn't make any sense of it because I, in the middle of it, I had, is this the same John Weiser? Are there two, three of them? So
there are a couple of us, but yeah, I had a pretty diverse background. So I started as a mechanic, working on cars. I started my first sort of car business around 12 or 13 years old. Worked on cars for a little while, kept coming up with innovations, whether it was tools from the dealership or ways to make a car go faster, things along those lines. I raced from about 12 years old, 13 years old, somewhere around there, until, God, I guess 2013. So, yeah, that's about right. Yeah, about 14, 15 years, somewhere around there. And then I actually broke both of my legs, had to get out of it, retired in 2013. But also considering the fact that I had invented this technology with my dad, I really was hoping that it would go somewhere. We invented it and really started working on it in 2008. And then filed for the patent in 2011-12. It was then granted in 2016. So, yes, the patent to end the patent system was granted by the patent offices around the world. So as soon as that started, I was as soon as that was granted, I was full bore in Loki. Had a stint in real estate investments in between, and in the racing world, I kind of expanded up from being a mechanic to crew chief to engineer to team manager, and actually this year team owner. So it's been a pretty wild ride, but you know, ultimately when you think about it, I was a systems guy. I was a system engineer, right? It didn't matter if it was aerodynamics. It didn't matter if it was motor. It didn't matter if it was a human body, chemical structures, or economics. Wherever that deconstruction of what the components of the system are and that sort of reconstruction in a way that it should work in the most efficient manner, wherever that was necessary, that's where I went.
So we could view Loki as something where some people are creating value and then some others, and they're expressing that in some way, shape, or form. And Loki is helping find valuable things, and someone else is able to estimate value, predict value, and purchase.
No, that's the one thing we don't do.
Okay.
It's objective valuation. Okay. The rest of it was absolutely right. Objective valuation, though. Nobody is predicting and determining the value.
Awesome.
Everybody is predicting and determining the value, right? It's a consensus-driven valuation. And actually, that's the subject. So at this event that I'm putting on next week, the UNConference, it's called the Crypto House, CRYPTOHOU.SE is the URL.
Okay. CRYPTOHOU.SE. Okay, got it.
Yep. So the
why did you call it the UNConference?
Because so originally it was kind of a shot across the bow at CoinDesk. It was originally called the Continuing the Conversation UNConference, and then sort of the subtitle was this is just names that we were playing with, but the subtitle was actually getting to consensus. The point is that it's just two or three people that are going to be speaking on a couch. We don't have panels. We don't have pitches. We don't have keynotes. What we have is questions that are industry-wide that need to get answered. And we're going to do hour and a half long sessions where we're going to loop in the entire crowd. The entire crowd is just speakers and speaker-level people, experts in their industries, from regulators to economists to journalists, you know, Wall Street Journal, things like that. to huge investors, both on the equities markets and commodities markets, as well as the crypto markets, exchanges, all that sort of stuff. So it's really is genuinely the world's thought leaders in and around the blockchain industry, as well as outside the blockchain industry. We've got some people coming from the Milken Institute, that this big fighting match that was going on last week is going to continue. I can promise you that. We've got the whistleblower from Cambridge Analytica that's going to be there. We've got some people, the COO of Snap is going to be there. So we've got both sides of the social media data aspect, right? It looks like there may be somebody from Telegram coming. So it's going to be really wild. Both sides and views are well represented. And the premise is to get a very well-rounded perspective on everybody's views, right, on everybody's different sides. Because when we get in these crypto conferences, we have a very large echo chamber, right? There's a very singular perspective, and as one of my to quote my friend JoJo, she always says, "Yeah, I've never seen so many people furiously agree in my life." Okay, that's very eloquent. That's perfect.
Yeah. There's almost an air of expectation that, you know, you're supposed to be having certain tendencies or inclinations to be a part of a conference.
Yeah, it's a weird industry in that sense, right? So I've been involved in multiple industries at the stage, in real estate, in analytics, artificial intelligence, machine learning, but also engineering and racing and aerospace. This is the first industry I've ever seen where people don't speak up when they disagree; they get quiet. And they only speak up when they agree, which is just so counterproductive and counterintuitive. So I wanted to change that, right? I wanted those that really were industry leaders to get their voice.
And does the Crypto House Unconference have a theme? Do you have a title or a subtitle?
Just go on the website.
Oh, I will do that. Now you'll arouse my curiosity, so I'm going to do that.
Yeah. We've got a great team. There's a bunch of people there.
Okay, I'm going to pause. So let's go back to the value definition you were giving me, John. I think that was very interesting, because most people, you know, the problem with some of these common words is that we assume the definition. And that's good and bad. When you went back to something as fundamental as value and you started deconstructing it, I said, whoa, we need to do this. So can you start off from there?
Yeah. So right now, currently in our existing economies, right, predominantly a fiat-based system, right? There's a couple of outliers to that being native tribes of some indigenous, like Native Americans, but also Aborigines, things like that. They still do bartering systems. OPEC, for instance, has an asset-backed currency that's backed by the very commodities that it trades. International Monetary Fund also has the SDR that they've been working on, which is the special drawing rights. Those really are the few outliers. These are very rare currently. But in our existing system, we look at the sum of value and the analysis of the sum of value as GDP, the gross domestic product, okay? GDP is broken up into three things: products, goods, and services, right? Now, again, it's subjective, but we'll use this number. Last year, I had seen numbers that were right around $144 trillion in gross domestic product. In purchasing power, right? PPP is kind of the mean value of all of it, or it's a sort of smoothed out. Within those, you've got a breakdown of about 15% that goes towards services, which are largely banking, legal, and finance. Okay, another roughly 15% that goes towards the goods, and those are predominantly agriculture, livestock, and textiles. Okay. These are things that really aren't traded as much on commodities markets, but they are large industries. And then you've got products. Now, products make up about 70%, and those can be broken up into three things as well. Products are broken down into efforts or energy exerted by something that can be computers, machines, robots, plants, animals, or people, including even the sun. Then you've got you've got the materials that are mined from the earth, right, or the universe. Okay, again, the second root store of value here. And then you've got the idea of what a product is in the first place. Right? Product doesn't turn into something that's consumable until it's been combined with other materials and effort has been exerted. Now, when you look at these, okay, the materials that are mined from the earth, those are traded on commodities markets, right? Efforts, energy to transform the materials into a product, those are traded on equities markets. We call those businesses, right? But you've got another thing here, ideas. Where are those traded?
Where?
They're not, right? Now they can be. And the reason they weren't traded is really twofold. One, there was no way to tax it, right? There was no way to control the on-ramp and the off-ramp. The other aspect of it is it's too hard to get a uniform objective valuation metric globally, right? You could never get purchasing power for an idea or for an innovation. There are different markets, there are different market opportunities, there's different yield, there are different costs of labor, there's different costs of materials. There are just simply too many moving parts and variables to do that until now. What really was the aha moment for us was recognizing that we didn't need to create a fiat valuation for ideas. Those three root stores of value don't need to be based on a currency. They don't need to be based on fiat. Right, right now, all commodities are traded over the US dollar. Why? It used to be the other way around. We used to be on the gold standard. OPEC works perfectly fine on oil being the basis, right? And gold being the basis of their currency. So why would it be the other way around? Simple answer is taxation and greed. It's manipulable, right? When we really looked at this, we said, okay, we could create a purely relative valuation metric that was objective, that was merely based on novelty. If novelty is the consistent basis or the consistent variable here for all ideas and the value of an idea, right? And the first novelty of any product, say an iPhone or any cell phone, has the most opportunity for iterative permutations, then that first invention is worth the most. The most novel is worth the most, right? The least novel is worth the least. That's pretty reasonable. We got down the road and started to come up with some fairly fancy ways to objectively understand what novelty was and define the potential permutations of things. And we created a relative valuation metric that was, if there are going to be 1,000 inventions or permutations of this one invention, the first one is worth 1,000 coin. The last one is worth 1 coin. That's it. And if it all transacts through, and I can go into the valuation, the economic model, but if it all transacts through a centralized entity, yet the valuation metrics are all decentralized, it actually produces a much more a mutually aligned incentives platform. And that's something that I really feel is where this industry and frankly every industry, every economics model is going to be going is decentralization of the entity may not be a good thing. It is fantastic for some things, but it's not good for everything. You don't want to decentralize the atom bomb, you know, homemade nuclear device or homemade pathogen, right, that's capable of killing a bunch of people. You also don't want to decentralize a government's secrets in some cases, right? You don't want to decentralize things that are around medical research quite yet, right? And it's not a matter of centralizing it for profit. It's a matter of centralizing it to a point that there's maturity in a market and they can understand it. You still effectively give the keys to the kingdom to everybody and control the value.
I'm sure you heard about, there used to be this company, I don't know if it's still around, called Quirky.
Quirky, yeah. They're actually in New York. I've met with them several times. I wonder how things are going. We've spoken to them about partnering.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know why that it's one of those random connects in my brain as you were talking.
They're very cool.
Yeah, here we're looking at collaborative. There is a crowd. There is an intelligence of the community coming together in estimating value and relative value of the ideas. I think.
Yeah.
The key takeaway is that, you know, heck with the absolute value. Let's pick this idea and say this is one.
Yeah.
And the next one, is it below this or above this? Oh, no, this is 10 times above this or 10 times below this. I think that's great. That makes sense to an engineer like me. So,
yeah. So let's talk about the king of all of those root stores of value, right?
Yeah.
The three root stores of value, again, I'll reiterate here. You've got materials mined from the earth or universe, okay? Effort or energy exerted, right? So materials, commodities market, effort, energy, equities market, and idea, right, of what the product is. But if you know all innovations that are coming out because the world's economy, the world's inventors are the ones collaborating and the ones contributing to this system, right? And you centralize the transactions, which means you can see what entities, what businesses, those that all the anarchists want to get rid of, right? You can see which one of those is getting the competitive advantage. And by the way, they're doing it by buying the coin from the very individuals, which hikes up the secondary market value, right? Balancing the entire load here. Then you also know exactly what equities are going to be best in value. Right, you understand exactly what equities are going to be most valuable in a fiat market. Well, the equities market is completely driven by speculative valuation. You end up breaking the speculation. Actually, more appropriately, we end up breaking the speculative valuation. We being the inventors, the contributors to societal growth, right? Now, on top of that, if you also see all of those ideas and inventions that those companies are buying, those enterprises are buying, right? Don't you also know all of the materials that are going to be required to bring them to market?
Yeah.
And guess what? That now means that you break the speculative valuation of a commodities market. You've broken the rest of the economy. There is no point for debt vehicles. There is no point for an investment like commodities markets, equities markets, derivatives, bonds, securities, anything like that. There is absolutely no purpose for them. We collectively, all with our minds, end up saying, okay, ideas themselves, what we contribute to society ends up being more valuable. And why is it valuable? Because those that create products, those that create innovation and push the world forward, say so.
Yeah, yeah. And you're taking the progressive next step, right? So the physical products were useful and then the exchanges were useful and then came the internet and then you said digital is more useful and then the store of value. So you're taking the logical next step because if you take the 80-20, what is the 20% of the companies with the greatest value? It used to be physical and then it went to digital and then the mobile. Yeah, so you're taking the logical next step. You're pushing it upstream, and you're saying, hey, it's really the ideas.
Exactly. And this hasn't come from, you know, a subjective perspective from just my end, right? It's come from, oh, my God, there's this step and this step and this step and this step. And it's a derivation, right? It's deconstruction. So you had asked another thing before we got on the interview about speculation of what is going to be next, right? What's going to be the next big thing? And I think this is a good segue into exactly that. A lot of people, and yet another discussion that we're trying to have in our Crypto House event here. Right now, as the cryptocurrency blockchain industry, we invest quite heavily in the protocols, right? That's where the bulk of our funding goes, between Bitcoin, Ethereum, Litecoin, Ripple, whatever. But let's deconstruct that for a minute. If we're going to speculate on the future, let's talk a little bit about what history has taught us, right? What's happened in the past. So let's say the previous big industrial boom, right, the internet. If you wanted to group together the top businesses in the internet space, what are they? Maybe Facebook, Google, whatever, right?
Amazon, whatever, Netflix, yeah.
Yeah. Would you consider those protocols, or would you consider those data or assets?
I consider them as applications built on top of protocols that have used and generated and used data.
Exactly. Yeah. All right. So not protocols, they're applications, right? They're specific use cases. And specifically, if you want to compare the internet to something like the one before that, the big industrial boom before that, the interstate highway system, automotive and mass transportation, right? Same thing. Same exact thing, right? If you think of the greatest players or the greatest businesses in the transportation space, you don't think of the roadways, right? You don't think of asphalt manufacturers or guardrails. You think of Ford or BMW or, you know, Toyota, Volvo trucks, you know, trains, whatever, right? And then going back again before that, you've got railways, steel, the protocols, the infrastructure layer, not the most valuable. In fact, a very small percentage of the overall market, right? Keep going all the way back, right? It doesn't matter what industry it was. Printing press, gold itself, right? Hell, even money. Right? Money you wouldn't invest in, currency itself you wouldn't invest in by investing in the printing press, right? You'd invest in the debt vehicles. So what I'm getting at is it's not just the applications. It's the transactions and the transportation of the asset, of the most valuable asset. Google is the truck, train, plane, whatever you want to call it, for search data, right? For classifications, for categorization of link analysis, for PageRank. It is the fastest, most efficient way for us to find information. Amazon, the same with goods, materials, actual products that we want to buy. Facebook for social aspects, right? These are very efficient vehicles for the transportation of a asset class, which is data. Same goes for the highway system, right? The trucks, the transportation itself of those goods, those materials, is where the value came from, right? And people being the assets as well with cars. When you really look at this from a macro perspective or an economics perspective, you say, wow, well, anything that's transacting the most valuable assets at the fastest pace with the least resistance is going to take the market share. It just is, right? You fundamentally cannot have a protocol or any infrastructure layer increasing in value if no assets get brought in from the outside and can transact over them. That's just the reality. So in this event, we have I want to say at least north of 10 billionaires that are there. Could be wrong. People's portfolios may be adjusting. There certainly are a bunch of funds that are represented. But I'd like to try to get people to agree on this and understand that in one conversation we can effectively transfer this from a sort of a weak position that we have in being in a protocol that people don't really even use for its purpose, currency like Bitcoin or something like that, into the applications, into the transference of real useful value or transaction. And there are some really amazing technologies and companies out there, and I don't think they're getting their fair shot yet.
So I think we can go on for hours on this. Maybe I should come back to you and have a series with you, John. But I want to understand the economic model, because you referred to it, but you didn't cover that.
Yeah.
What is the economic model behind this?
It's one that we invented. It's called the Rainmaker. And the way that it works is you can think of it as a cloud and a body of water. Okay. That's going to get a little bit complicated. So try to stick with me and don't be afraid to chime in if I get esoteric here. Okay. So this is a recirculating supply token model. Which is how any good economic system works, right? Even the fiat system, money has to go out from the mint into the Federal Reserve, from the Federal Reserve back out to the banks. The banks get, you know, offer the currency to the people. The people spend it at the stores for products. The stores then reinvest it into manufacturing, and it goes back in and recycled into the mint or Fed, right? Until us, I didn't see any recirculating token supplies, which makes no sense. In fact, the very concept of token burning does not exist. Everybody seems to neglect to understand that this is all immutable. It's literally written into the very code that the entire basis of the ecosystem works on, right? It's written into the Ethereum code. So the way this works is the cloud, in this case, is the Loki nonprofit foundation or the Loki Foundation, okay? The body of water is the market, secondary markets, speculative, whatever. There are 100 million tokens that we created, and it doesn't really matter how many tokens you create with this model. It's just half and half, right? 50 million of our coin go towards the foundation, and then 50 million gets distributed to the marketplace. Okay. Marketplace sets the valuation of that currency. It's a free market where those that want to buy the coin to transact in multitude of ways must buy it from a secondary market. They cannot buy it from the Loki Foundation. Okay. So that 50 million coin held by the foundation is perpetually locked up. It can never be used or exchanged for fiat capital. And it can never go on to an exchange, a secondary market. However, what it can do is buy and sell the assets. In our case, intellectual property. On the other side, the body of water here, the market, isn't locked up. They can exchange for fiats or anything else, right? But however, what they cannot do is buy and sell the intellectual property. This is a symbiotic relationship, right? One must require the other in order to balance each other out. And that's very nature, right? So as an invention comes in, it comes in on one side of this economic system, right? It brings in a new recognition of value. The invention then gets sold to the foundation, at a valuation metric that has been set by the crowd. Okay, as more inventors come up with more things, there is a dilution of novelty and henceforth less value for each of these inventions. So the crowd determines the valuation, and through smart contracts, the foundation must execute and purchase these inventions. Now the foundation then means that that has an intrinsic amount of value. And because it was the issuing entity, it now has created an asset-backed currency. Assets being intellectual property around the world, the sum of it all. Okay. The foundation then packages each of these individual inventions together into an investment pool that is greater than the sum of its parts. Okay. It then offers up a speculative bid to an enterprise or a company that wants to buy, say, the iPhone, right? The thousands of inventions that go into an iPhone. Apple would love to buy it. They put up a bid for, say, 10 million coin. They must buy it in coin, okay? Google, 7 million, Amazon, 5 million, and Samsung, 6, right? Apple wins, and in doing so, they must buy this investment pool of intellectual property for 10 million coin. The problem is that Apple doesn't own any coin. So they have to buy the coin from the very inventors that received coin for selling their idea to the foundation. This drives the secondary market valuation of the coin up. And is the only time where there is a transference from fiat inward to cryptocurrency for an asset that had nothing to do with cryptocurrency. Now, because this is intended to be a non-profit foundation here, there's a profit delta that has occurred. This profit delta effectively rains back down, right? Because anytime there's an imbalance between a cloud and a body of water, it effectively drains. It rains back down to the body of water, buying and acquiring up all of the innovations and inventions that have been staked on the blockchain through the system, which have hence contributed to the valuation metric, but have not been desired, have not been sold. The market hasn't determined that they had value. This means that all of the innovations, whether they're recognized as value or not, or opportunistic, I guess opportunities, market opportunities, all of that value now gets acquired by the very thing that is creating the currency that is backing everything else. In a nutshell, what that means is that this is an economic system that is economic perpetual motion. It can go up in value from speculation, but it can never go down.
Makes sense.
Sorry, I know it's esoteric. I know it's complicated.
I had to take notes while you were talking to understand it. I hope the audience does the same.
Sorry, I forewarned you it was going to be complicated. It makes a lot more sense in a drawing.
Yeah. That's exactly what I was doing when you were speaking. It made a lot more sense while I was drawing it out. But this is great.
If you think about like a water ecosystem, right?
You've got That analogy has certainly helped me. And same with the money circulation analogy coming from the mint, the printing press. So, yeah. Awesome. Well, we could go on and on, but we have probably 3-4 minutes to wind this down. What are your other key thoughts that you wanted to communicate to our audience, John?
Oh, that's broad.
I mean, in the context of what we already spoken, because I wanted you to tie up the any loose ends that you have in the conversation thus far.
I guess a couple of big things. From an industry perspective, for those out there that are looking to buy into cryptocurrency or invest, and want to understand how to get it right, start asking a few key questions, right? One, who are the operators? Regardless if it's altruistic, if it's anarchistic, libertarianism, whatever. These are all businesses. Even if they're nonprofit, they're all businesses. And business is really hard. It needs solid people that really will persevere, right? That will push through. It is very difficult. It's not fun. The prestige wears off very, very, very quickly.
Yeah.
Look at the operators. And I'm not talking about advisors, right? I'm not even talking about board members. There needs to be people that are qualified, that are very capable, that have been in the trenches. Stop reading white papers and start reading resumes. Right? Start reading into what somebody is saying. That leads me to the next question that I ask is, what's your why? Why are you doing this? Why does it need to be a token? Why does it need to involve blockchain? Why do you need the money? And why are you trying to change a fundamental system? Okay. And at the same time, what was your reason for it, right? What was your personal involvement? How did you get to know this very well? Another big question is, does this look into the regulation? Now, in the US, that's quite difficult. I needed to get really in on my own in order to understand that these people really have absolutely no clue of where they are. We've got a Senate hearing that's going on, I believe right now, actually. This is supposed to be about Ethereum, recognizing it as a currency as opposed to a security. We'll see. I've got several colleagues that are sitting in on it right now. And my phone's been buzzing in my lap this entire interview. So it's probably about that. But that's another big aspect, right? Really analyze the way the thing works. And then another big thing that is really big, that's really important to me is, extrinsic motivators don't work for things that already make people feel good. Giving somebody an economic reward in money for something that they're proud to do, is not going to work. Facebook would not work if they paid people per post, right? It would not work. It works because of the compound network effects. Instagram the same way, Google the same way, Wikipedia, right? Just does not work by giving somebody a coin to reward them for doing something good. Think about the motivators, right? Things that are rote tasks that are boring, that don't necessarily require desire, need, or much drive or pivots. That is something that is totally motivatable with an extrinsic reward like money. Stuffing mailers, absolutely, right? You know, stuffing letters in an envelope and sending it out, licking stamps, you know, delivering things. Yeah, absolutely. But it doesn't last long term.
Yeah. Great summary. Great. I mean, that's something that I did not expect you to summarize, but I'm very happy. Look at the operators, look at the resumes, not white papers. What is the why behind? Look at the regulations and look at the motivations and the motivators. Yeah, I think that's an excellent
wrap. Mutually aligned incentives. If every business in the world, if every foundation, every government and every currency solely focused on mutually aligned incentives, the world would be a very different place.
Awesome. Now, that's a good place. Like I said, we are up on time, but John, thank you for coming to the Crypto Nights podcast. I will most certainly come back to you. I think we will have you back on our show many, many more times in the future. But really enjoy it, and I wish you the very best in the various things that you're doing.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Crypto Nights. Never miss an episode. Subscribe now at www.cryptonights.io.